Hello, welcome to Pod Maverick After Dark. I'm Kirk Henderson, joined by Josh Bow. I would say, as always, by Josh Bow, but Josh covered my ass on Friday when I was just having a flipping life experience. Josh, how are you?
I'm okay. Trying to think of what we're going to say.
Well, what we're going to say is that the Dallas Mavericks lost for the fourth time to the Minnesota Timberwolves, this time by 30 points. Let's see here, 124 to 94, which is many, many points. The Mavericks not only got beat four straight times by the Timberwolves, they got beat four straight times by double digits. And that's actually quite hard to do in the NBA. The Wolves and probably Thunder, but not, I don't know. The Thunder always play down to the Mavs level. The Timberwolves were really one of the few teams all season that did not play with their food when it came to the Mavericks and just absolutely thumped them. Point of attack defender has been a problem for Dallas all year long. And, you know, kind of all my entire time I've been a Mavs fan, save for like a season or two. But when you're going up against a guy who's coming back from injury and where did he go? And Anthony Edwards. It's just, you know, Anthony Edwards came off the bench and was plus 29 in 23 minutes, scored 17 easy points. And it's just like the Timberwolves have the Mavericks number right now. What the heck was Coop's problem in the first half? That was pretty brutal.
Yeah. And especially without Jaden McDaniels, mm-hmm. Who's obviously the Wolves' best perimeter defender. And, you know, pretty much a guy that you would think would be tailor made to turn the water off on Coop. So they didn't have him. And it was still a struggle, and the Wolves are still big without McDaniels. I mean, they can throw, you know, Gobert's at the rim. Edwards is still good when he wants to lock in. Yep. Randall can be good when he wants to try. Like, a lot of their guys they have left are just really big and good athletes and can be good defenders if they give the effort, outside of Gobert, who's always a good defender. So I think they just frustrated him with length and arms. And then obviously the Mavericks didn't have enough spacing and shooting to alleviate that pressure. And it was rough. Gobert was eating everything up at the rim all night and they didn't have a counter.
Yeah. And the Mavericks going into the game, they had about half the team listed as questionable. And it seems that Najee Marshall was downgraded late. And, you know, it's when you come into a game day with a little bit of uncertainty, that can throw things off. There's elements of that going on. This was a pretty tough game for everybody involved. Then they ran into the former Chicago Bull buzzsaw, and they say his name, Ayo Dosunmu.
Ayo.
God, it's terrible. And he was out. I was terrible in his pronunciation. I apologize.
You're good. You're good.
In 33 minutes, just put up 18 points, 15 boards, 12 assists.
He was awesome, and he's been good for them since the trade. Yeah. That was a good pickup for them. Cooper is shooting. He entered tonight shooting 21.1% from three in the month of March, which is basically since he's come back, I believe, from injury.
That's right.
His jumper is pretty broken. He was shooting. He was hovering, you know, his last like five or six games, I think he was around 38 to 42% from three. So he was kind of heating up.
Low volume.
End of January.
Yeah.
Now he's still low volume and just not hitting shots. So that injury layoff did not do him any favors with his jumper. And the Mavericks haven't really put him in lineups that are asking him to succeed. This was actually probably the best starting lineup he's probably played with in terms of like giving him honest to God NBA spacing. You know, you got your rim runner and Gafford, and then a real point guard, and then two shooters. I mean, it's honestly the most shooting and spacing he's had in a starting lineup, I think, since before he got hurt. And lo and behold, they just get the snot kicked out of him. It's like it didn't even matter. That's what happened. You know, Middleton, Christie, and Nimhard combined to attempt a total of seven threes. Like, those guys are on the floor to shoot. Nimhard got out four in 20 minutes, which is pretty good. But Christie shot two threes in 28 minutes, and Middleton shot one three in 23 minutes. If I cared, I would go back and watch and see if that was that the Wolves just hugging shooters tight and trusting their backline defense against Coop drives in the paint because you got Gobert, or were the Mavs just unwilling to do anything to get those guys free? But like the Mavericks are a bad three-point shooting team, but those are basically what, three of their best active three-point shooters besides Clay. And they're not even shooting. Like Middleton and Christie starting and playing 28 and 23 minutes and shooting three total threes. Like that's bad. You're not going to win. I mean, they're already going to win, but this is what turns those scrappy competitive clutch games they always seem to play into getting your ass kicked.
Yeah, they're down 10 at the half, and then the third quarter, the Wolves just blew the doors off. I mean, I knew it was like over when Rudy Gobert diving down the lane, he just has terrible hands historically, makes this incredible it's almost like a reaching for a catch in the end zone, and then turns and like scores while still like going downhill like a bat out of hell. That was when I knew. Like, all right, well, this one, I mean, it's over at that point anyways, but it's like the Mavericks normally at least make it respectable, and that did not happen. So, all right, we're a mere 7 minutes into the show. Josh and I have talked about this game as we are sort of contractually obligated to, but we're not going to waste time further.
Oh, can I give you two fun stats?
Yeah, of course, no.
An update, the Mavericks still haven't won a home game since January 22nd.
So the new guys have not won a home game.
No.
That's funny.
Yeah. Their last five wins have been on the road. They haven't won a home game since January 22nd.
That's amazing.
And they've only got one. They've got three more home games left: Orlando, Lakers, Chicago. So they might finish the season with one more home win. Maybe that Chicago game.
I don't know. I mean, you know, that
Orlando's kind of weird.
Orlando is having one of the most collapses I've ever seen. They're just so, oh my God, they gave up a historic run to Toronto, I think yesterday or the day before, 31 points. If Giannis doesn't play tomorrow against the Bucks, we might beat the Bucks.
But that's on the road. I was just talking about home games.
Home games, okay. Yeah, that Lakers game on Sunday is not going to be pretty.
No, absolutely.
Yeah.
And then the other fun fact is Minnesota shot 29 of 35 in the restricted area.
That seems good.
29 makes is a lot. 35 attempts is also a lot. So
it's a lot.
Yeah.
So here's what we're going to do here. I'm going to go to break, and Josh and I didn't even talk this out. I'm going to give him the option to head out and go edit for Mavs Moneyball if he wants to. And then we have Tyler Edsel, who you guys heard recently too. He's, I asked him to come on to talk about this weekend in college basketball, because if you're like me and you only have kind of the bandwidth for pro, I'm following college through my phone. I watched the painful end of that Duke game, that poor guy. But otherwise, I've missed a lot of these games. And what's been particularly interesting about this, and I'll talk about this with Tyler, is there's just a lot of guys that are within the Mavericks range. Now, you guys remember the Mavericks have however they end up in the lottery, and then they get the Oklahoma City pick. And then they also have a pick that's like from Phoenix that's in the second round that if you're a true sicko, there's just plenty of dudes. And like, this is, you know, I had hoped we got some draft guys before the 2024 draft, and I was really hoping we were going to be able to write and cover a bunch of stuff. And then the Mavericks won the lottery, and there's just nothing to talk about. So we're like, oh, we're drafting Cooper. That's boring. So Tyler's going to hang out with me. So, Josh, if you want to go, I certainly don't blame you. But otherwise, we'll be right back when we return from commercial here. So thanks so much for hanging out. There are three ways to support Pod Maverick. The main way is literally listen to the ads. That helps a great deal. That's how Josh and I get paid every quarter or so. Then there's a couple of links in the show notes if you're feeling very generous. And then the third way is just to tell your friends. We've not lost any subscribers. That's nice. But it's been a tough year.
Yeah. How about this? I'll edit in the background and I'll stick around and maybe
sure, pop in and ask some questions, because you're smart about this stuff. All right, so we will be right back. I'll insert those ads right here. So hang out. Okay. Welcome to the show. We're back. It's Josh Bo, Kirk Henderson, and now Tyler Edsel. Tyler, how you doing, buddy?
Thank you, Kirk. Thank you, Josh, for letting me hijack the show once again.
It's not a hijacking. You're saving our absolutely yeah, saving good our asses.
Like, in the spirit of baseball season, I feel like I need like some, you know, warm-up music here to like eat up some innings here. And while the, you know, the Rangers are losing 7-2, here's your middle reliever to come eat three innings. I got you. I'm happy to do so.
What if the NBA had a ref review system like this one that Major League Baseball has, where it's finished within 7 seconds? Like, I would be so excited.
Isn't that what the Hawkeye is supposed to be for, like, goaltending?
You'd think, but we can't do things correctly in the NBA. We have to bumble and stumble and rumble around. All right, so there was a lot that went on this last weekend, and you know, it's this last weekend is pretty much indicative of why, you know, college basketball watchers love the NCAA. We went from the Sweet 16 to the Elite Eight, and now we are staring at the Final Four. Do you want to go by prospect and sort of talk about the prospects instead of what would be the most fun for you, Tyler?
Yeah, we can do that. I think chronologically.
Sure.
If we're going back to the Sweet 16, I think we have to talk about Wagler versus Fleming. So that was kind of the big ticket item as we were going into the second weekend, as Illinois played Houston in Houston. And I mean, that was a game that really formed, kind of validated some of where I was already leaning with where I was at. But the numbers look similar. Like, I think Fleming's had 11 points and Wagler had 13. But if you watch the games, I mean, Keaton Wagler in the sea of chaos that is Houston's defense just orchestrated that game start to finish. He had the game under control. It was played at his pace. He had 13 points, 12 rebounds, a few assists, just one turnover in his 30-some-odd minutes in that game. And Illinois led by double digits for basically the entirety of the second half. I mean, it was really, really impressive to see. He couldn't shoot it very well, missed quite a few layups. I mean, it's going
to
happen.
Houston does that to teams. And, like, I asked – there was a meme – I guess it's a meme – I saw some videos before like the tournament even started about how overinflated some of the basketballs occasionally are at the NCAA. And like, I was looking at the shooting percentages in that game, and that definitely seemed to be a little bit of the case there, where it's just like bricks aplenty. So Wagler has he's absolutely come out of nowhere relative to the high school rankings, and that simply does not happen. And right now he seems to have thrust himself in the, let's just say, 4-7 range of the hypothetical draft. Is that correct?
I don't know if he's gotten all the way up to like a Caleb Wilson, but he's firmly in the ACUF range, where you're probably one of them is going 5 while the other will probably go 6, I think, at this point.
So let me ask you this then. So I saw a number of people that, you know, drafty people that I don't really know, just opine that they thought that Wagler, like, just off of this weekend and sort of the momentum from Wagler, that they thought the Mavericks would be a great fit for him. Why?
So he does a lot of things at Illinois that translate to the pro level. He plays both on and off ball, because when Illinois is fully healthy, they play Kylan Boswell next to him, who's more of a kind of true point. Smaller guard, kind of see a lot of the – don't get me wrong, he's not Kyrie Irving. He's far from it. But you can kind of see the vision when he's playing both on and off ball. He shoots it great from three. He's over 40% on the year on non-insignificant volume. Like, kind of the biggest gripe with Fleming's was he doesn't shoot a bunch of threes. Wagler does. He gets them up. He gets them up at a good rate, and he shoots them well.
Okay. And
finally, like, he's just not a player that – don't get me wrong, he's not Luka in terms of his pacing, but he's not an athleticism-based player. Like, you kind of hear a lot of these guys where it's like, well, he's not necessarily quick. That's a knock on him, a knock on him about the size. He's not super physical. Watch him play. Like, this guy gets to his spots not based off of athleticism, but technique, footwork, and just pure skill and creativity. Like, he gets to his spots. There was a three-pointer that he hit against Iowa to put Illinois up by two in the second half. I'm sure you might have seen it because I'm sure I blew up our Slack with it, where he gets a guy on an island, crossover, kind of spin step back, you know, that kind of move that Luka used to do, and I think Penny Hardaway did it back in the day, and just drills a three. He put the defender who was on his hip. By the time the ball went through the basket, the defender was the one who caught it when it went through the hoop. So, I mean, he took him from the three-point line, broke him off to the point where he catches the make. So, this is a guy who understands basketball. The coach talks about it all the time. Didn't go to, like, a shoe brand AAU. Played for a former point guard at Oklahoma State. Kind of learned the game. And, I mean, they just talk so glowingly about him. He's kind of made it undeniable at this point, and he would be a great fit in Dallas, particularly because of his ability to play both on and off ball at that 6'6 frame. You can play him and Kyrie together while also planning for him to be your lead guard going forward.
When we here at Mavs Moneyball are adherents to the big guard strategy, it is sort of where you and I, Tyler, have lived against some of our colleagues who very much enjoy these other players, which I think is a nice pivot directly into the other potential draft guy in this range, Houston's point guard. Mm-hmm. Talk to me about his game and what happened to him in that elimination game compared to what we saw from Kingston in the season, because I saw a guy in that tournament or in that particular game who looked like he just wasn't ready for the moment, which is a little bit surprising. And there was nothing. He had some explosive drives and some really smart playmaking during the season. And that game felt like the moment was just too big for him.
It's where the hesitation to shoot really looks bad.
Okay.
Because he had some moments where I thought he could have let a three fly. Mm-hmm. And he kind of hesitated for a second and either moved the ball or drove or whatever it may be. So I think that's kind of where that comes from.
Okay.
It's not – I do think he's still – like if the Mavs fall to seventh or eighth and he's available, like you take him in a heartbeat. That type of guy is highly touted. He was one of the best players in the state of Texas coming out. Like you trust the talent and hope that you can work with it because he does have pro traits. I mean, the guy is beyond quick. He has a great first step, can get downhill. But I mean, there are obvious concerns with the jumper, and that's where, especially in this game, when you're not shooting it well and you're not confident to shoot it, it just doesn't look very good. So I do think maybe the moment was a little big. You know, it was practically a home game for Houston. They were playing at Toyota Center. So yeah, I mean, it's a big moment. Lights are bright, and yeah, he didn't necessarily play all that well. It was unfortunate to see, but I mean, you come to think of it, like Sharp missed a ton of threes off of his passes.
Yeah,
Uzan was 2 of 11.
Really bad shooting for that.
I mean, it was tough.
Yeah. Well, okay. So, you know, I'm sure we're going to hear more about Fleming, particularly if the Mavericks, let's just say the Mavericks, right now they're six. Let's say the Mavericks happen to fall to like 8-9. Mm-hmm. I think at this point, that is kind of a Fleming range. Like he was a potential top five guy earlier, but I think he's probably going to be more in the like the 7 to 10 range, just because I actually think he'll probably top out at like 6-2, which is going to be it's a challenge. It's just to be honest. Was there anybody else in the South bracket? I can't remember on the Iowa team that's like worth talking about.
Yeah. Would you like to talk about perhaps a guy who I've changed my opinion on most in the last month?
Yes.
Bennett Sturts. He's an older guard. He's 22, plays for Iowa. He did not shoot it well at all this tournament. And that's what got Iowa to the point, was that Sturts was basically kind of game breaking this team. And he was shooting the ball well, played all 40 minutes of pretty much every game. Like think of like Christian Anderson, but Midwest.
Kinda. Okay.
and a little bit bigger. So that's kind of what we're looking at. And in this tournament, he played almost every single second of this tournament for Iowa. I think of the 160 minutes, he played like 159 and 30 seconds. Like he was out there for the entirety of their four-game run. For the tournament, he committed two fouls and had three turnovers.
That's crazy.
In 160 minutes of play. So this is a guy who takes care of the basketball, makes the right plays. Like you saw it at the end of that Florida game when he's driving the ball up, when he kicks it to Fulgaris for the three to win. He could have easily been selfish there, taken the shot, got downhill, tried to tie the game with a layup, whatever it may be. Trusted the pass, gave the ball, delivered it on time, on target. It's a three, it's a winner. The knock on him has kind of been defensively. You can pick on him a little bit. I mean, you watch him like, yeah, sure. There might be a little bit of that, but he's got some size. He's not super small. And I think this is a guy that if you like gun to my head, it's like, is Bennett Sturt's going to be a pro in 2035? It's like, yeah, he's going to be running a second unit for the next 12 to 14 years.
Just very Rick Carlisle coded point guard. What you're describing to me.
And he's got more upside than I think I gave him credit for.
That's pretty funny.
So he's one that I've had to adjust here.
I must note that the Mavericks are legally not allowed to draft him because they cannot have guys named Cooper and Bennett on.
Yeah, that would be problematic.
That's just very prep school coat. You know, Keaton is a bit of a stretch as is, but we'll make an exception due to the game. All right, so that's the South Conference or Southern part of the bracket. Where do you want to go next?
I think up next we got to talk. Can we skip ahead to the end with Duke?
No, it's fine. Yeah.
Can we talk about that game yesterday?
We don't have to talk about anything you don't want to talk about. I wanted like 15 minutes of your time. You've already given me 7. So whatever you want to talk about is good.
Hey, we're not even halfway through the bracket yet. I'm worried about keeping y'all all night. Okay, so this game yesterday with Duke and UConn. I know what I thought about the game. Did both Kirk, Josh, did you get the chance to watch this?
I tuned in the last 5 minutes because I'm sitting there, and just for a full rundown, our Slack has a running conversation throughout the game. Jordan, one of our editors, talked about how he felt like the Final Four was right. You know, obviously, blah, blah, blah. You had basically given up. And this is probably when Duke is up like 19.
Yeah.
So I check in the game with like 4 minutes left, and the game is down to a reasonable – it's still – really tough for UConn to come back, but I want to say it was like 6 or 8. And it's just like Duke made one field, like it was the most Mavericks coded second half I have ever seen a college team play, because it was just, they went 10 minutes with only a singular field goal. Go ahead. Keep going.
So I guess there's a couple angles we can talk about here. The Cam Boozer part of it, I thought he was great yesterday. It also in this game leaves me wondering what his true upside is. It's like his matchup in theory in this game was going to be Terrace Reed for UConn, who's just 6'11", 260, burly type old school center. And Terrace Reed had, you know, 20 and 10 pretty much. I mean, he kept UConn in this game because they shot 1 of 18 to start the game from three. And for UConn to be in that game late was a credit to what Terrace Reed did. But down the stretch, I mean, Duke's able to dump it down the post, get buckets with Boozer. But on the other end, you see him give up threes because, you know, a lot of times they've got smaller guys out there that Boozer's tasked with guarding because they played he and their other center, Pat Ngongba, out there at the same time. And that left Boozer on Caravan, who's a smaller guy. And UConn runs these great sets where they move the guys around, motion screens, the whole bit. And so Caravan hit a three with under a minute left to bring the game to one. And it's because they can't do the things they wanted to do defensively, Duke, that is, because they've got to protect two bigs. Mm-hmm. And Boozer's not the most athletic guy in the world. I mean, we're not breaking any new ground here. So it's just kind of interesting to see what potentially next level looks like for him, because he is going to be undersized to play the five.
Yes.
And in the modern NBA, you're not going to be able to run around with some of the fours. I'm not quite saying he's Zion, where it was like, well, he's kind of small to be, you know, a four.
Zion was like an S tier athlete.
He was. And even then he still struggled to find a fit in the NBA when you can't shoot. Mm-hmm. Boozer can shoot. He has that going for him, but his issues are going to be defensively because he's going to be too small for your fives. He's going to be too big to run around with fours, and that just leaves him in an interesting spot. So I don't know if that's necessarily
– if they win the whole thing, what this becomes, if they win the national championship, essentially this becomes a back burner item that gets discussed in lieu of his winning, because he's just a winner, and he's a skilled player who brings a lot to the table. And I think you're able to ignore this if they win the national title, because Duke was missing one of their guards due to injury. And it's the sort of thing to where you can sort of, but I just, for me, with how basketball is played now, I need a ball dominant guy, not ball dominant, but it's just like, there's something about it. Like if the Mavericks pick fourth and he's available, am I going to be mad if they pick him? No. But if the Mavericks are picking one and two or something like that, if they got lucky, I would be really frustrated if they pick Boozer. I just don't see, like, I see like a 12-year veteran just like his father who's able to be part of good teams but not be like the centerpiece. And if you're drafting that high, you need to be right.
Yeah. He's not a guy I think that changes your life.
Yes.
And, you know, to that point, when Foster was out for Duke, Boozer on the year averaged right about 3 turnovers a game, which is already pretty high for a guy who plays a 4. Mm-hmm. Without Foster in the lineup, Boozer averaged 4.5 turnovers a game. And that is largely in part to, I mean, playmaking out of that spot is difficult. And if you're not on your P's and Q's, you're going to turn the ball over. Granted, NBA spacing could look a little bit different, more room to operate, things like that. But that was a little bit of a red flag for me. And it just kind of, you know, watching the end of the game yesterday, it all kind of, the puzzle pieces started to kind of match up a little bit. And then Braylon Mullins, who's kind of been a whipping boy in our Slack for times at this year. I mean, coming into that final shot, he was 15 of his last 63 on threes. And this was a guy who coming into the year was seen to be one of the best shooters in college basketball.
Has looked broke all year from the shooting.
Shot at under 34% from three this year and almost 40% from the floor. It has not looked great at times.
I'm just glad we're not going to be in the position to have to discuss him. To be quite honest,
pick 9.
Yeah, he'll be there, but it's just you can't do that to me. Was there anybody else on this side of the bracket that was interesting? Anybody in Michigan State? I can't remember.
No, they're a bunch of old dudes. They won't really be draftable guys. Nah, St. John's, same deal. I mean, I think Zuby Ejiofor is awesome, but he's a second round pick. Pick 50? Yes. Yeah, sign me up. But
all right,
not pick 30.
So what about the bracket? Because we got Arizona heading to the Final Four. Obviously, a lot going on with that bracket. I think we got to talk about the Braden Burry's
Darius Acuff game
against Darius Acuff. That was a really fun game.
It was very up and down. You could tell very early on that like Arkansas had nothing for Arizona defensively, and it played out. They scored 109. Burry's was really, really good in that game, which is going to be interesting when we juxtapose that with how scuttlish he was at times in the Elite Eight game, which I'll get to that more in a second. But with Arkansas, like Burry's got a lot of Acuff. He got a lot of Malik Thomas. Yes, Acuff got 28, but it was on 19 shots, and it took 14 free throw attempts to get there. So he was 8 of 19 from the field, 1 of 5 from 3. Job well done defensively.
Yep.
And Malik Thomas was in mid-teens. I think he scored 15 or 16.
Like, yeah.
That's just winning formula for Arkansas. They kind of let the dudes tire themselves out. And then, you know, on the offensive end, I mean, he's been like that this entire tournament. He's been uber efficient. Made a bunch of threes. Of Arizona's threes this tournament, Burry's himself has made over 50% of them. I think he's made 13 of their 20.
Is he a freshman?
He's a freshman, but he's an old freshman.
How old are we talking? 20
by the time the draft comes.
That's fine. No, that's fine. Like, if we're talking 20, like the Yaxel, what's his name over at Michigan, is 4 years, 2 months older than Cooper Flagg. Like, that's just a different timeline.
Cooper will be Yaxel's age in the 2031 season.
You could very easily talk me into Burry's for these Mavericks. I want a high swing. Like, no matter where the Mavericks pick, I want the guy who the Mavericks feel has the most potential to be a superstar. I don't want a safe pick. Which is why I think I think Burry's has both a high floor and a high ceiling.
Yeah. Cause I've compared Burry's to being basically kind of like Derek White, who that's kind of like the quintessential, like, is he a star debate type guy? But then you've got guys who I know you respect, Coop, who does Mavs Radio and Mavs TV tonight. Shout out to him. He was on Twitter kind of saying that he was more of a Brad Beal kind of mold. which obviously
that's I don't know what that means. Brad Beal has never been a real NBA player. He's been an idea of an NBA player his whole time. He's scammed money out of multiple franchises. He's never once been interesting. Sorry.
And where I differ on that is I think Burry's has a much, much higher defensive floor. Like he's going to guard you. And I'm going to do this actually for a piece probably on the site here, either before the tournament starts back up this weekend or potentially in kind of like a debrief. But like Burry's is basically top 15% in college basketball in all sorts of categories, whether it be catch and shoot, off the dribble, kind of pick and roll offense, like finishing for a guard. He is like, there are some kind of advanced numbers that say he's one of the best in college basketball, kind of in terms of both shooting and getting downhill. And then he's a great rebounder. Like he gets nearly 5 rebounds a game as a 6'4 guy,
which is frankly something the Mavericks need. Like that's been a big, like we've not really talked about it too much, but the Mavericks, you know, like if Cooper has a weakness, it's that he's not a volume rebounder. So if that's a, that's not a criticism, it's just kind of point of fact right now. So the Mavericks, if they're going to build, you know, like that's just an added bonus to get from a shooting guard position. Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see anyone else. I mean, obviously there's plenty of guys here, but did anyone else sort of like drastically improve their stock within this region?
Dalen Swain at Texas was awesome this entire tournament. Against Purdue in that Sweet 16 game, he had a big and one to tie the game late. He's been phenomenal this whole tournament. I'm not going to say that that one game kind of drastically did anything, but if coming into the tournament, we're like, that's a dude who could be somewhere mid to late 20s. I think that's a guy who's somewhere probably late teens, early 20s now.
Yep.
I think he's like the shot is not broken. He just is way more comfortable getting downhill. I think an NBA team is going to beat the crap out of him to shoot, catch and shoot threes. And, you know, you'll probably see a bump in production just off that by not, you know, kind of aimlessly driving downhill, which don't get me wrong. He's really good at it. He's a big dude and he knocks guys off his path. But if he takes kind of the gimmies there and, you know, shoots a couple more wide open threes, I mean, there's plenty to be tapped into. And he's only a junior. He's not super old. Like that's a guy. If he's going to go well before the Mavs pick, but that's a guy who, if he's still sitting there at like 23 or 4, I'd be calling everybody on the phone to see. It's like, hey, what could PJ Washington and pick 30 do for you?
Sure. No, what about the dude on Purdue that was like on the cover of Slam magazine? Who am I thinking of?
Are we talking Braden Smith?
Yes.
Point guard.
You know, he looked like kind of a, you know, seven assists, 3 turnovers against Arizona. Didn't really do much else. Is he a real player? Is he just like is he a college guard?
I think he's more of a college guard. Like he's going to be a second round pick purely off of like production. And don't get me wrong. He's an excellent pick and roll player. That's all Purdue does is they just spam pick and rolls with their bigs. And he's really, really good at that, but he's kind of a one trick pony and he's extraordinarily small.
Yep.
And the shot comes and goes rather frequently. Like the reason Texas was in that game against Purdue is because Braden Smith was largely terrible shooting the ball. So
yes,
it is what it is. But yeah, he's a phenomenal college guard. I think in the NBA, he'll kind of just be what he is.
So then we're on to the last bracket, the Midwest bracket. And I think for me, at least this Michigan team sort of solidified why I they're kind of, if they beat Arizona, they're winning the title. Like they're going to beat either UConn or Illinois pretty handily. Any takeaways from this one? Like Nate Amet looked like he had a real nice game against Iowa State. You know, they were a 6th seed to get all the way to the Elite Eight. It's pretty impressive. Mm-hmm. But then they just got boat raced by Michigan, losing by 33 points.
Yeah, I mean, for Amet, it looked like kind of the same situation as Fleming's, where perhaps the lights were brighter than we were anticipating.
Yeah.
I don't know what he finished at, but at one point he was like 1 for 10 from the field, I think. Like it just wasn't very good. But he had some nice moments this tournament. Like I thought he was a lot better this tournament than he was, especially earlier in the season. You could see kind of some growth going into it. Like he played a little bit better down the stretch, but I was struggling to see the vision. I can at least kind of get there and see why a team would take him in the lottery. Like, yeah, there's some tools there to work with. But yeah, I mean, Michigan is such a unique team to kind of throw him at when you've got Yaxel and Merez Johnson, who's going to be a late first round pick, and Ade Mara, who I think is a legitimate option for the Mavs at pick 30. That's just a tough, tough front court assignment when you've got three dudes who are all 6'10 or taller and they all are active like that. Very, very tough for a freshman who's not quite seen that size.
Well, that's pretty good. All right, this has been a beyond fantastic recap, more than I could have hoped for. You know, we have – it's so funny. This is just a side part of covering the draft, like I have sort of badgered our team to, where we're going to be writing, like, the same themes, players, between now and June. Like, it's just – that's just what's going to happen. We're going to have wonderful debates. The Mavericks have real opportunity, which is why this is so interesting to me, because it's your last real shot with your own controlled picks, because you don't really have anything in 2027. You have nothing in 2027 except for second rounders right now. And that's a big deal. And if the Mavericks, you know, it was pointed out to me just listening to the Bill Simmons podcast that the Spurs lucked into the number one pick, the number two pick, and a number four pick, which is, you know, how you go from being really bad to being really good. Mavericks aren't going to be able to do something like that. But if they are able to, like, jump up into the top four, it really just changes trajectory. So I think some of our fans are going to get a little turned off by this just because we're going to be talking about this for next several months. But it's really the only thing that's interesting about the team. Like, we beating on Flag's weaknesses right now feels stupid because the team's not constructed in any way for him to benefit, you know? And so that's really where a lot of this stuff comes from. And, you know, the last time the Mavericks had a real franchise changing draft, and I'm just going to be honest about this because they fucked it, was 2020. They had an opportunity. Josh Green was the ended up being the pick. They screwed that one up. They screwed up they screwed up their two second round picks. Not a single player that the Mavericks acquired in the 2020 draft ended up being meaningful. And, like, that just completely kicks your team building. The fact that the Mavericks made it to the finals is a testament to the fact that Nico Harrison took big swings and that they paid off. Now, the funny part about this, and Josh and I kept talking about this, and we probably will for years down the road, we'd be talking about, like, the Mavericks team building problems right now if Luka were still on the team. It's just, it's a different deal. So now we're all kind of back here. We're going to be talking a lot about draft. You know, Tyler will come on as often as he feels like it, and Brian and some of the other dudes will too. We're just, you know, it's a good time. I'm also telling everybody right now, consider going to Summer League. Because there will be at least two Dallas players playing, if not all three, in Summer League. Maybe we'll also get the French guy who we drafted a couple years ago, Jinka, who never really panned out.
Can I go one more thing real quick?
Well, of course you can.
We also, what makes this potential draft so interesting from a Dallas perspective, we have no idea who's going to be making that pick, because by all indications, they have no clue who they're going to hire as GM.
Yep.
And so seems, therefore, until we know that, we'll know nothing about what that GM typically goes for, which, if they hire, you know, like, for example, the guy who's the Dennis Lindsay.
Dennis Lindsay. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I mean, at least if you bring in a guy like that, you have a track record of kind of what they're looking for in a player. But if they go Finley Riccardi or one of them or both still, like, we're truly flying blind in terms of what players they like. So this early first-round pick is going to be a real good idea, whoever they bring in as GM, on what they're going to see the Cooper Flag vision as moving forward, which will be really fun to see, because we'll have truly no idea what they got.
What a fun time. Well, thanks so much for joining, Josh. Are you okay over there? You're muted.
Oh, I'm good. I didn't want to make any sounds while Tyler was talking, but... No, Tyler, I appreciate you coming on. And again, it's hard for me to watch all this stuff. Like Kirk said, you know, sometimes we're just following it on our phone. I feel like I know what happens in every game when I talk to you.
I agree. No, it's great to watch. And this is the part about this where it's great, where Josh and I, every couple of years, we have to bring in folks that have the interest in these things. Because it's not to say Josh and I don't have it, but it's just we don't have time. So Okay, this has been Kirk, Josh, and Tyler. We're here at Pod Maverick. You can find plenty of stuff to read over at Mavs Moneyball. I'm sure as the Final Four rolls up, we'll have interesting thoughts on that because there's still guys playing in the Final Four that are worth paying attention to as far as draft, as we just covered. So this has been a lot of fun. Everybody be good. We will talk to you soon, and go Mavs.